Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Welcome. I'm Anne Wilson, and I'm delighted to welcome you to Emerge Australia's 2025 podcast series, in which I have the pleasure to speak with a range of individuals, patients, clinicians, and researchers impacted by and associated with ME/CFS and long COVID. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we meet and pay my respects to elders past, present, those emerging, and listening to this podcast. Once again, you've listened to Emerge Australia's Ambassador Bloom singing her beautiful rendition of John Lennon's Imagine. Today, we continue our series of speaking to Sarah Visor, executive coach, author, and patient. Sarah has lived through it all, from being mostly housebound and feeling let down by her body to now functioning well despite daily fatigue. We continue working through Sarah's book, Too Tired to Think, an intersection of hope and reality for those who battle with ME/CFS and their carers. Welcome back, Sarah.
Hi, Anne. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back. So last time we spoke and discussed your four-stage framework for recovery and the stages some go through to reach what you call a new normal. Today, we're going to cover the peaks and troughs you've identified of the day-to-day and specifically post-exertional malaise or PEM. For those listening to this podcast, I want to put out these are Sarah's experiences, and your experiences may be similar or totally different, dependent on the severity of your disease. So, Sarah, please tell us about the various stages of navigating the highs and lows of the day-to-day based on your experience.
Thank you, Anne. So this is to build on our last session where we talked through the marathon journey that we go through, all of those different stages to reach what I've called a new normal. For me, full recovery hasn't been possible, at least not yet, living with ME/CFS. But for me, I've found that relabeling it to this new normal, I've been able to reach a stage where I can take my life and go, this is my life, this is my new normal, this is how I'm going to go. But a big part of the discussion for anyone who's living with any condition that leads to chronic fatigue,
Don't worry.
I've just got in my own head.
No, that's okay. Just start from a big part of the discussion.
Yeah. So a big part of the discussion should be around the peaks and the troughs, the daily lived experience that we go through at any stage of the journey. And this is where your energy might feel maybe even somewhat manageable one day and then exponentially worse the next. It's a really variable experience, and that's what my life has been for the last 8 years or so. So it feels really important to discuss why this happens and then how best to manage it, particularly in those times of the troughs or the really low times. So part of this is going to be decoding the signals that lead to these troughs and how your symptoms may feel so terrible at different points in time. And this is going to be something that we call post-exertional malaise, or PEM.
And that's really a very important diagnostic factor for ME/CFS. Can you outline for us what PEM felt like for you?
Well, what it feels like, I still unfortunately do get PEM. But PEM feels like it's this feeling of crashing, relapsing, collapsing. Look, I would say it feels like sometimes that I'm in trouble. My body's in trouble. I even feel like I'm on this path to, I don't know, if you want to be dramatic, even say I feel like I'm dying in some ways. Because it's not just fatigue. It's going to be all these other symptoms that come up. It's going to be things like body pain. I sometimes feel really weak in my muscles. People get headaches. You can have nausea. We know there's things like POTS, which can lead to dizziness and your heart racing. Debilitating brain fog. This is one of the worst parts of it I've found, which is an inability to think. But then overlaying all of those other things is this overwhelming exhaustion that just rest doesn't seem to fix. Now, when you hear about PEM and its post-exertional malaise, so malaise is that word that we have, from people who don't understand it, even our professionals, or anyone who hasn't experienced it, I've had it described to me as just general malaise. That's how they would describe it. But it doesn't do it justice. Just like the word fatigue, for that exhaustion, I don't feel like it does it any justice at all. It's such a polite term, and to me, it comes across as like really can be a little bit condescending, or even victim blaming, because the actual effects of PEM is so much more dramatic. If you might say, it might be feel like you've been hit by a truck, or in my book, I say it feels like sometimes I've gone 10 rounds with a boxer. You feel absolutely like just like out of it. And it can feel for me like I'm in physical danger. So it feels for me like I'm actually in a physical danger. Now, in the book that I've written, I've shared a couple of different scenarios. At the beginning of each chapter, I have a character that I like to talk to just to kind of help bring the symptoms to life of all the different things that we're going through. And for the PEM chapter, we talk to a character called Priya. So Priya, in the book, is a character. She's a 29-year-old stockbroker. She lives in New York. And in 2022, she got a mild case of COVID. And she was struck down for a while. And then she seemed to recover, but she never quite fully recovered. And it was only after a period of time that she got diagnosed as having the long COVID. So in mid-2022 was when this happened. And at that time, like Priya was busy working, like many of us when we first start having these types of conditions. She was a bit of an A-type personality, maybe. She was training for the New York Marathon. And what she found was that, with all these different symptoms that she was having, she wasn't getting any better. Like so many of us, she goes, okay, I'll give it 2 weeks. And then hopefully I'll be better after that. And that 2 weeks is what we usually give ourselves. I know I gave myself 2 weeks to get over all my symptoms. And after 2 weeks, you can kind of convince yourself, you go, all right, I have to get my life back on track and I have to go back to work and do all these different things. And so she tried. But after this 2 week break and she tried to start her training again, she just found herself crashing over and over. And it was not just this intense fatigue that she was feeling, the exhaustion, it was the muscles, the joint pains, splitting headaches. So, you just give yourself a few more days to recover. You try again. You try to go back to work. You try these different things. She tried to train. But what she found was she was entering into this cycle of giving herself time, maybe getting to a little bit of like function, and then crashing again. She felt so unwell at the end. And when she finally did get a diagnosis, she was able to say, well, all right, I'm going to have to give myself more time and I'm going to have to pull out of the marathon. But being such a strong and motivated person, that decision hurt more than the actual condition itself. And that's been my experience. It's often all of these choices that we have to make because of things like PEM. Is a shocking and debilitating time for anyone that goes through it because we have to put our lives on hold And we find all of these things that we would normally do in our lives to make us feel like we're happy and productive are just off the table for us. So that's the experience of PEM.
Wow. How long can PEM last?
Well, I would say, as you said at the beginning, PEM is like pretty much it's part of any diagnosis. There will be PEM present with ME/CFS. And what I've found in my experience is that I'm 8 years in now, I still have PEM at different points in time. It's not as severe as when I was first diagnosed, but I still get PEM because PEM is like it's the, what we call is the after effects of physical, mental, or emotional exertion. So you're going to get PEM anytime that you exceed your what we call the energy envelope or the amount of energy that you have to spend in a day. You go too hard one day and you feel the effects the next. So for a normal person, they will do some activity, they'll go to work, they might, go do some social occasions, they might do a hike, whatever, and they feel tired. That's a normal response. But for someone who's living with ME/CFS, and, you know, what I find we go through is there's not necessarily going to be a correlation between how much activity you do and the effect that you feel. So you might feel really tired. And for some people, they are so affected. It might even just be having a shower or cooking a meal or transferring themselves from their bed to the couch. It's anything can trigger this sense of PEM and all of these really intense feelings and all these other symptoms that go along with it. Now, for me, I don't know if there's anyone else who can relate to this, but I'm that type of person that I get a whiff of energy and I go really hard. It's like, it's just my personality, always has been. And so I entered regularly what's called, we call the boom and the bust cycles, where exactly like Priya did, like you go, well, all right, I've got a little bit of energy today, so I'm going to do all these things. I'm really excited. And then what we find is with PEM is it's usually an invisible line. So you might feel good in the moment. You're able to do all the things that you want to do for that time that you've got that whiff of energy. But then what you're doing is you're paying a price for it. And that price can be delayed by hours, but sometimes it can be delayed by even overnight or a few days' time. So that invisible line is one of the most frustrating things. You're never quite sure how much activity or how much energy you do have to spend in a day to not give yourself PEM.
So how do you manage that sort of unpredictable line and the variable nature of PEM, considering it can be such a delayed response?
Yeah, you manage it very carefully, basically. But I would say the first part of managing this is to be really aware of your own triggers, of what's going to trigger your PEM. And, you know, when I say to you, like if PEM is about overexertion, if I say that to you, what comes to mind might be all the physical things you do in a day. So you can usually say, all right, if I do too much, if I feel like I'm going to walk around the block even or like something like that, I'm going to get PEM. So we can often physically say, all right, yes, I know what I have to be really careful around that. But what's not understood and what I really didn't understand the first few years is that there's other things that trigger PEM. There's going to be mental things that trigger PEM and also emotional loads that we shoulder. So it's the physical, mental, and emotional load altogether that's going to add up. Basically anything that stresses your nervous system. So I can give you a couple of examples of each of those if you'd like to help understand what that means.
Sure. And in your book, which I would really recommend people get a copy of so you can actually just go into it and read it when and how you like, you've got a list of triggers, you know, the physical, the mental, the emotional triggers. And I think you're going to go through those for us now. I think they're very, very helpful for people to consider quietly on their own to figure out what are that your personal triggers, and then if I know I've got those triggers, what do I have to do about that?
I've put it in as a tick and flick type list because, and you might find yourself ticking all of them, or there might be one or two that you go, "Wow, these are the really big ones for me." I won't go through the full list now. There's a lot in there. I'll just pick a couple. Maybe, for the listener, just think about your own day-to-day life and maybe where are the going to be some of the big ticket items for you, some of the big triggers. So physical triggers. It's going to be anything physical, exertion, any exercise that you do, planned or unplanned. But one of the things that we sometimes don't understand is the daily activities that take some of our physical load. And that might be just doing the household work, anything that you might do, anything work related, just being aware of all your different movements. We know that exposure to extreme temperatures, such as heat or cold, I find personally that the summer here in Brisbane is really hard to take. Swimming in cold water, cold plunging is probably not going to be a good idea for people because that physically triggers our bodies. Obviously, lack of sleep is always a big one for anyone, but particularly so for ME/CFS or poor quality sleep. We often find that we wake up feeling unrefreshed.
Yeah, can I just interrupt you with that one? What do you know about poor quality sleep?
Yes, I've got a whole section around that in the book. It's
Oh,
it, that is the hardest one.
good. We'll deal with that later on.
Yeah, there's a lot that if sleep is a problem for you, and I find I sleep a lot during the day. Even now, I sleep a lot during the day, and then I sleep a lot at night as well. The big ticket item for me for feeling like I could get my life back to doing a little bit more was that point that I was able to wake up and feel refreshed. That feeling of waking up and feeling unrefreshed, that was a killer.
Yeah, it's the unrefreshing sleep that the killer, isn't it? And unfortunately for a lot of people with ME/CFS, that's what they've got. It's the night after night after night after night of unrefreshing sleep, which sort of, even if you don't have ME/CFS, you just go, wow, if I have unrefreshing sleep for a week, I'm way behind the eight ball. You don't have to make all of that up before I get to the stage where I've actually started to charge my battery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's one of the hardest ones, isn't it? And it's not an easy one to fix. And I don't know if there's any one good example of how to fix it. But there is a lot of, I found there's a lot of literature online, a lot of sleep experts now. You might be able to find one or two things that help. And or it might just be the time that you're in and it's like this. For me, I found it did, as I said, that sleep became a little bit more refreshing, maybe around 4 years in. I can't tell you exactly what I did to make that happen. It was probably the combination of everything.
Yeah, no, I understand that totally.
So there's some of the physical triggers. Let's talk through the mental triggers, because these are the things that are probably really hard to really get your head around sometimes. But it's things like concentrating. So concentrating for a period of time. At the beginning, I couldn't even watch TV. So I would listen to podcasts because I found I didn't have to concentrate as hard. One thing to be cons to consider is part of the mental triggers can be multitasking or frequently switching between tasks. So if you're sitting somewhere and maybe you're watching TV or doing something and you're also fiddling on your phone, which we all do, that is actually a good example of multitasking. You might be adding some mental load in there just without even understanding that.
So what you're saying is that if you focus doing one thing at a time, that is going to take a lower mental load than if you're multitasking when you're doing multiple things at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. But it can be that focus as well. If you're focused, depending on how long you're focused and depending on what you're doing, that can also be a draining type situation. Yeah. And I guess anything where you're feeling like you're overstimulated, a lot of screens in our life. And when you people with ME/CFS can be really sensitive to light, to sounds, it can make you so hypersensitive to everything. As well as, so the other mental thing to be aware of is the effect that people have on you, those social occasions. So just the act of speaking, of listening intently, of having to reply, of having to hold space, that all adds to our load. And then the last big bucket, so that was the physical triggers, the mental triggers, and then the last big bucket we've got here is the emotional load. The emotional triggers. This is a big one. And this is one that's kind of be a little bit insidious. So obviously any type of stress or anxiety that kind of like wears at you. Intense emotions, if you're feeling intense emotions, and it might be big negative emotions like frustration. I had lots of road rage when I was first going through all this. Even big emotions like excitement, it takes a toll. Social interactions when there's like high emotional content. So I find any type of situation where my emotions get involved, it just drains my battery so much more quicker. And then, so that's something that I've been aware of is just understanding if I'm watching TV, if I'm reading a book, how much am I taking on? I try and stick to light content. Rather than horror or thrillers or something that's like, got you on the edge of your seat. So I guess it's a good just question to ask. What are your triggers? And building your awareness around what are the physical triggers, what are the mental triggers, what are the emotional triggers? And hopefully you'll start to find some patterns, or maybe you'll even find some things that are really big ticket items that you can start to work on.
For those people who can, would it be worthwhile them noting those down somewhere, whether you do it on your phone in notes or whether you take a pen and jot it down in a notebook where, as you feel a particular trigger, you write down what that trigger was so that then you can start to monitor what your reaction is, because if you know it, then you might be able to, it might be able to help you cope with it. Is that something that you think is feasible?
Look, I think the problem you might have with that, because always keeping a journal, I always say keeping a journal of your experience gives you that information. And we'll talk through that when we talk through the medical side. But the problem with PEM is that it can be a little bit delayed. So you're not necessarily, so what happens is for me anyway, I know that I might, watch something that's got high emotional content, or I start to cry, I feel really involved in it. I might not necessarily have the energy reaction straight away. It might just be that I'm really sluggish the next day. So, what might be useful in that situation is okay, I'm sluggish the next day. What's been happening the last few days? Like, what is there anything there? What we're looking for gradually is what are the, I guess, the patterns that you can see. Your big ticket items, and you want to maybe find the things that are really having a big impact on you first, because trying to take on all of your physical triggers, all of your mental triggers, all of your emotional triggers might just be an absolute drain in itself. But yeah, building your awareness over time is always going to be really helpful. For me, I know now with PEM. As I said, I still get it. I know it's, I basically feel like PEM is this big warning sign. It's a big flashing warning sign saying, you've done too much, Sarah. Please be careful. Like, and what I find is that, I sometimes will make a choice. I will do something. I will have a work commitment that I can't get out of. I will have a social occasion that I want to go to. And I will make a choice in that situation that I will take that on because I have to or I really want to, knowing that I'm probably going to get a bit of PEM, but it's a choice that I've made. And what I have to do in those situations is, I guess I've learned to accept as part of my new normal that this is my life and it's a good life. And, you know, I will appreciate the things that come my way and the chance to rest and recharge where I can.
So does it ever catch you unawares?
It doesn't as much anymore, but I'm 8 years in, right?
And so if you understand what causes it in you.
Yeah, well, I can kind of predict in a lot of ways. What I do is I have a physical diary where I keep track, and you know, we'll go through some of the strategies that I use which is around the pacing side. But I can kind of see over my week where the big ticket items are going to be. Where it does catch me by surprise sometimes is if I have an emotionally intense conversation. Anytime you have any emotions involved, and that's something you can't predict, that I will feel the effects for what days to come. But I now have the strategies in place, the mindset in place for how do I manage that.
Right.
So let's talk about pacing. So pacing is going to be one of the best ways to manage your PEM. And, you know, look, pacing itself is not an easy thing. And do I get that right every time? No, not at all. But what I find is pacing has become this routine of activity. It's the rhythm of the day. And the aim for it is going to be to find the rhythm that's going to be the most comfortable and the most achievable that you can work within for your current energy levels. Now, notice I say current energy levels because energy levels are a fluctuating thing. And for anyone who has been living with ME/CFS for a while, they know that one of the hardest parts of these conditions is that your energy is going to fluctuate. It's those ups and downs, the troughs, the peaks, treaks and troughs. And even when you do get a bit of consistency, and if you're anything like me, and I know you've said it too, Anne, you're full at the gate, you go a little bit too hard. And like I said, this PEM is this big warning sign going, flashing warning sign going, hey, you did too much that day. So sometimes pacing is just about taking it day by day.
So I want to just talk a bit about pacing, because we say to people that you need to rigorously pace, but often doctors will say, oh, well, you need to pace yourself. So this is where it's really important to understand how to plan pacing so that you can conserve and build enough energy in your battery to do the things that you want to do.
Yeah. And the battery is a good analogy for it. I've used that analogy in my book because basically pacing is about keeping your battery to the point where for me, it's not, I'm feeling like on the couch going, I'm going to die soon because I'm just so exhausted. But one thing that we know that when you're living with ME/CFS, at whatever variability that it's affecting you, whatever stage you're at, it can feel like you've got this faulty battery within you. And so what I find is, you know, you wake up in the morning, and if a normal person has 100% battery, you might find that you've got only a 50% charge or a 20% charge or a 10% charge. You know, I say normal person, but it could be the normal for you, what you used to be able to do in a day. So you're always like, the first thing I had to let go of is that comparison of like what I used to be able to do. My current reality is my battery is, I'm waking up, it's not that well charged. I'm going to get through the initial burst of what I need to do in the morning, but then I need to plug my battery in again pretty quickly.
Absolutely. And that's really interesting, because the analogy I use is with charging your mobile phone. So, you know, most of us have got a mobile phone and we'll charge it when we go to bed at night. We wake up in the morning, Bing, we've got 100%. But sometimes, occasionally, you charge your mobile phone and you wake up in the morning and it hasn't charged. And it's got a lower charge than it had when you went to bed at night. And that's because you may not have plugged it in properly or whatever. And that's what happens with people with ME/CFS. They go to bed at night thinking their battery's going to recharge, as in their body battery. But in fact, they wake up in the morning feeling more tired than they were when they went to bed.
Yes, that's it's awful when you feel like you've gone backwards, even though you've
Oh,
been
yeah.
sleeping.
And then it takes so much longer to go forward.
Well, that's the other thing too, right? You plug yourself in again, you charge your battery, and like charging can be sensory deprivation, it can be watching a TV show, it can be something other activity like mindfulness or meditation. I find my recharge is just sitting quietly with a cup of tea. Sometimes I close my eyes and I just listen to a podcast, and I manage to then probably usually to fall asleep. I can't listen that long. Just pat my dog. Just everyone's got their different ways of recharging. But your battery is not, it's there's something, there's something still wrong with my battery. It never quite gets to that 100% charge. So what I find is, and I, you know, this is what I say to myself, and this is what I've been working with, is like, okay. I check in the morning and it's like, well, I've got X amount of percentage of my battery. So how am I going to use that energy for the day? So pacing for me is around the choices that I make. And you know, the choices that we make, maybe you don't have any battery at all. I might just lay here and like today is just not going to happen. You might try and spend your battery in ways of like, I might get up and have a shower. I might move myself into a different location. Over time, I've found I can do more, and that's that recharging sleep, which was an absolute gift. But it's about these choices that we're making, and it's not a nice thing to have to make these choices. And it can be this human nature in us to rebel and to fight this at the beginning. I know I fight was fighting between my mind and my body, going, I want to do all of these things. What uses am I if I can't do all of these things? What I used to be able to work, and I used to be able to go out, and I used to be able to do all these different things. I wanted to continue living my life as I always did. But the choices I ended up having to make because of the knowing that, you know, if I go too hard, it's going to hurt myself. I'm going to get PEM. I'm going to be laid up for days. It's going to have a really detrimental effect. So I started having to really think hard around what are the choices that I'm going to make here. And I know it can be really deeply uncomfortable having to make these choices. Like I've been through those feelings of I was really looking forward to going to an event, but I'm just not going to be able to make it. I'm going to have to say I'm be a no-show because I just don't have enough charge left. I know other people who are trying to continue working. It's like, and if they can't continue or they can't do what they need to do, or if they have to take a sick day, there's that guilt and that disappointment that they're letting other people down. These are the types of choices that we have to make with ME/CFS, which are often really like hard and don't feel like they feel quite cruel at times.
So how do you deal with the emotional fallout of the choices you have to make that mean that you can't do things you want to do?
Well, you know, it's not an easy one, and it's something that I've been living with fatigue, all of the feelings of fatigue, all of the POTS, all of the exhaustion, all of the other symptoms for quite a while now. So at the beginning, what I would do, my strategy was very flawed. It was to just either block everything out and say no to everything, or it was to overcommit and try and make it happen and then suffer. But over time, I've managed to find that pace of life. My new normal comes with an understanding of what I can commit to. And sometimes my commitment is a maybe. I'll just see how I feel on the day. And sometimes it is a absolutely, I will be there. And so part of the choices is sometimes I push myself beyond what I know is reasonable for me because it's something that I really want to attend or I have to work. Like there is the reality here that, you know, we need money to survive. And sometimes you have to do things that we don't want, like we don't feel like we are able to do. And, you know, that is one of the hardest things that we have to work through and something that I've been working through for years now. But what I've found over the years is I've been able to be a little bit more realistic in my mind. And often it's been about trial and error of just working through what is it that I can reasonably expect for myself.
I was just going to say, so can you go on to talk to us a little bit about some of the practical strategies that you've given in your book, as in tips on implementing pacing?
Okay. Yeah, no problem, Anne. So I've got five different strategies here that I've picked up over the years. It's my own experiences, also other people have shared. So here's five things that I've found that have worked. So the first strategy is around making the backbone of your day about taking the breaks that you need to avoid pushing yourself too hard. So we've spoken about the breaks, the energy battery. But for me, there's something that I try and schedule in first into my diary, knowing where I've got some free time over my day, but also over my week and then over the month to make sure that I've just got enough downtime. So if I do have to push for a little bit of time, I know I've got a break coming up and I can kind of push a little bit through that, knowing where I can take care of myself. It is hard though. It's like knowing it's, especially in those first few years, it was just knowing how much I could push. Sometimes with the delayed onset of PEM, it can be that you push too hard and then it's really hard finding that fine line there. But knowing where your breaks are is always something that I make sure is goes into my diary first. The second strategy is around breaking out your tasks into manageable chunks. Now, this is something that I do now, second nature. People often ask me, they go, how did you manage to write a book? I couldn't even do that without having ME/CFS. And look, I say to them, the way that it happened was I learned over the years the art of chipping away at big projects, chipping away at things, breaking things into manageable chunks. So what I would do is I'd wake up and if I felt okay, it might be a couple of hours that I could work, or it might just be 30 minutes or so, or some days I just wake up and it's a no. But what I do is I was just chipping away at it. It took a few years, to be honest. But breaking things into manageable chunks might be that you start something in the morning, you have your break set up, and then you come back to it. And then I think the secret to this one is just being happy with whatever you can do. Rather than judging yourself, rather than judging the situation, just being happy with it. I have a cleaning strategy in that I do just one thing in my house every day, and I still do it now. Like, and it might, on good days, it might be, an example might be I vacuum the house. And on a day where I just wake up and go, no, it might be that I just wipe the counters. But I'm happy with whatever I get done. The third strategy is just scheduling one big thing for the day. And by big thing, I mean, it could be a social occasion. It might be you have to go to work. It might be you've got a big job that you want to do, like something like you might want to have to go out and do your groceries, or you have an appointment, or you want to cook something. Just one thing. And I use this strategy a lot. I've just got one thing in my calendar. And then once I've done that, if I've still got energy, great. If not, I've done my one thing. I give myself a pat on my back. You know, that's what I've achieved. The fourth strategy is around saying no thank you when required. Now, this is probably actually going to be, should have been number one, really. It's, we know with ME/CFS that it's majority is women that are affected. And I can tell you now, saying no thank you, for me, I was a pleaser. I was like really uncomfortable with saying no thank you. But then here are the choices I had. I can please someone else and I can get PEM, or I can say no and start to look after myself. And if they're my choices, I started realizing that I needed to go with the second option. So this strategy is all around giving yourself that permission, getting a little bit more comfortable with being able to say no with grace and with confidence. Doesn't have to be a confrontational situation. Most people will take a no if it's a reasonable situation. The other thing that I said before too was that for some events, I'm a maybe. I've now taught people that I'm a maybe. If I can make it, I absolutely will. If I can't, then sorry, I'll have to be a no, thank you. And then the last strategy, the fifth strategy, is around using tools. So using the technology that you've got available, timers. We know I'm a very, I guess you would say, a type of person that gets really engrossed in things. So the good example was writing. When I was writing my book, I could just sit there for like hours really and write because I was just feeling the flow of it. But that is going to give me a really bad case of PEM. So using a timer, I would always put a timer on for, I used to do 50-minute sprints, but the Pomodoro technique, things like that, is 25-minute sprints. Depending on, you know, your condition, it might be that you just do a 5-minute sprint. It doesn't matter the time, but it's actually just making sure that you're managing the time that you're doing tasks so that you're not going to, with an understanding, you don't want to get the PEM effects at the end. So they're the five strategies. I'll just go through them quickly again. There's taking the breaks that you need, breaking your tasks into manageable chunks, and chipping away at things, scheduling only one significant activity in your day, saying no thank you, and using tools such as timers.
The reality is that what you've outlined in your five strategies is a really good recipe for just taking control of your life. I suspect, because I don't have ME/CFS, but I suspect that people with ME/CFS or other energy limiting diseases feel a sense of lack of control. And by implementing these simple principles that you've provided in your book, it does give you back. It feels to me, anyway, as if it gives you back a sense of control. Is that how you see it, Sarah?
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. It's not something that I actively set out to do, but I think you're spot on in a lot of ways. It's so hard when things are out of your control, such as PEM, and that invisible line. It's one of the most frustrating things that we have. So a lot of the strategies that I've picked up over the years, you're right, what I find is, like, you can have all the strategies you like, but a big part of it for me has just been this sense of peace and acceptance with where I am at my new normal. And I think that's the crux of it, in my experience, is no matter what condition I find myself in the morning or at the end of the night, it's about being happy with what I've been able to achieve. For me, I look back and I look at the achievements that I've done for the day, rather than focusing on what I haven't been able to do. And that was a turning point. It did take me a little while to get to that point. It's not something that you can instantly click into. But I think that for me has been the biggest thing of being able to just find that acceptance with my new normal. This is what I can do for now. And I always say for now, knowing, well, with a hope that there's better things to come.
It just seems that pacing is a pretty sensible thing for all of us to do, but particularly if you've got ME/CFS and you need to manage your energy levels very rigorously.
Yeah, I think for anyone with ME/CFS, it's your backbone of a strategy. Like you've pointed out at the beginning, it's what any enlightened doctor will hopefully talk to you about. Because we know it is a strategy that works to some extent, as much as you can. In my book, I talk about learning to love pacing and how to become a pacing pro. I can tell you I didn't love pacing for a long time. It's that feeling of being held back all the time. which I replaced with that peace and acceptance. I think though, like for anyone with living with ME/CFS, it's a skill set that if you can get your head around, it's, you know, it's working with your body. It's becoming more aligned with your body, and that sense of peace and acceptance is hopefully something that you can take to make those choices just that little bit more palatable at times, because the choices that we make can sometimes feel like quite rough choices to us. So embracing your new normal is around finding that sense of peace and acceptance within your own pace of life.
So I think we're going to finish up on that note, but I sense that a question that we can ask our listeners is maybe how can pacing best be used for you to achieve your new normal? And maybe that's something that all of our listeners might like to think about considering all the wonderful strategies that you've given us today in this second chapter of your book. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing with us again today. Sarah will return to discuss other chapters of her book in the coming weeks, so stay tuned and watch this space. I would like to recommend to you that you consider purchasing Sarah's book, because I've got it and it really does have some really helpful pointers in it for anyone, actually, but particularly for people with ME/CFS. So you can find all the details of Sarah's book on her website, www.sarahvisor.com/too-tired-to-think, and you can also purchase her book directly from Amazon. Sarah, thank you so much for today. So much wisdom that you've imparted from your own personal experience. And I really look forward to discussing the next chapters of your book with you.
Thank you, Anne. My pleasure to be here.
As always, today's podcast is part of an Emerge Australia series that records interviews with patients and people of influence to ensure that the voices of those with ME/CFS are seen and heard. This is a platform where we can together explore the pressing issues faced by over 250,000 people with ME/CFS and at least 400,000 more with long COVID. So tune in again for our next interview, and don't forget that for more information and to subscribe to the Emerge Australia newsletter, where you find a whole lot of information about the work that we're doing on your behalf, visit our website on www.emerge.org.au.
You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. And I hope someday you'll join us and the world.